Hello, everybody, and welcome to the .NET Bridge Invasion Show. We are here to talk about SummerSlam and many other things over this SummerSlam wrestling weekend. I am, of course, joined by Mr. Hayden Gleed,
who I believe some people call the most handsome member of this podcast.
Some.
Yeah.
Definitely some. Some is a number. And we're here, as I said, to talk about SummerSlam. Sorry, I'm Darren Guthridge. I didn't introduce myself. The most important member of the podcast, obviously.
As some might say.
As some might say, we are now actually truly a British Invasion podcast because Hayden's moved back to Wales.
Yeah, we were talking about this beforehand, and it didn't actually occur to me that we were actually both living in England for the last 8 months, 9 months while we're doing these podcasts.
And you would not allow me to call it the English Invasion
podcast. Oh, no.
So we now do cover 50% of the British Isles, but if you're a Scottish or Northern Irish wrestling fan, get in contact. We can actually make this a proper British Invasion podcast.
That would be pretty cool, actually.
Oh, yeah, because that wouldn't go wrong with a four-way Skype recording session.
Well, you know how little problems we have doing Skype session, just me and you.
We don't talk over each other enough. Let's throw
never talk over each other.
No, of course, we produce a lot of quality podcasts. And Hayden,
yes.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret.
Go on.
You know these wonderful podcast that me and you put out every week, on top of all the other .NET podcasts that come out every week exclusively for members.
The great quality professional wrestling podcast that is synonymous with ProWrestling.net, yeah?
Indeed. Well, guess what, you lucky, lucky people? If you go to the .NET membership sign-up page on ProWrestling.net and type in the code SLAM7, that's 7, the number 7, all one word, you can get .NET membership for 1 month for just 50 cent.
No way.
Indeed. For that low, low price, you will get access to all of the .NET membership exclusive podcasts. That will include this weekend alone. That will include member audio for the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor show on Friday night, the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2 audio review on Sunday, and, of course, the big audio review of SummerSlam itself. We'll also be bringing back ProWrestling.net Live. You can listen in to Jason Pell and Zach Zimmerman on Sunday at 2 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Eastern, and what we figure is 9 o'clock? No, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock our time.
GMT over here in the UK. You can tune in, listen to Jason and Zach talk about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn and take your calls on Sunday. .NET Live will also be back on Monday and Tuesday as well. And on top of that, you get access to the membership forum. You get to listen to all of the audio we have for every single American TV show in the week. That's Raw, SmackDown, NXT, TNA, Ring of Honor, The Works. You can also listen to mine and Hayden's one and only at this point Progress Wrestling show. But don't worry, we're getting on top of things now. We've had a bit of a problem with Hayden moving house that's prevented us from being a bit more timely with those podcasts. But don't worry, they are on the way very, very, very shortly. Yeah. All of that for just 50 cents if you go to the website and type in the code SLAM7. Right.
And the thing is, Darren, before you move on.
Go on.
50 cents, which is about, what, 30 pence in UK money?
Well, whilst you're jabbering, I am going to figure out how much.
Yeah. But for that amount of money, for this weekend alone, it's just an unbelievable deal. But you're getting a whole month. It's not just the SummerSlam weekend, which is going to be outstanding in itself, but you're going to be getting the whole of the next essentially 31 days. How can you complain about that? It's the perfect opportunity to jump on board, see what we do, and I can almost guarantee you will be impressed.
Yeah, all of that, what I've just realised, is 38p.
That's Brexit for you, that is.
That Brexit for you all over again. but yeah, let's get into the meat situation. SummerSlam 2016, one of the big four pay-per-views. And as they did last year, ever since the advent of the network, in fact, they are really rolling out the bandwagon, the WrestleMania-sized bandwagon almost, for SummerSlam this year in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center.
Yeah, it's become a huge event these days. You know, you've not only got the actual main show on Sunday, which is a loaded lineup, which obviously we're going to go through in a little bit, but you've also got NXT in Brooklyn once again. And, you know, if it's anything like last year's NXT TakeOver, it's going to be outstanding. And you've also got, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but to make it more of an event, you've got the show on Thursday. I can't even remember who's headlining because it's not my kind of thing. But even so, it makes it more of an event. It makes it more of a destination. And I'm one day I'm gonna go to WrestleMania, but I'm at the point now where SummerSlam is not too far behind in my wish list.
It's not looking too bad, is it? It's the kind of thing I hope they now roll out for Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble as well. I feel like the weather's maybe against them doing that in November and January, but yeah. Those are the big four pay-per-views. I know Survivor Series has lost a lot of luster in that respect, but
yeah.
I think the advent of the network, the fact that the pay-per-views themselves are becoming less special because they're on the network, they're still, like, okay. They're still doing a good... Well, sometimes they're doing a good job of building them, sometimes they're not. But I feel if you made those four really big marquee shows and you built your year around that structure of these are the shows we really try everything for, and with the advent of the brand split...
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, you have those four shows as the only four shows where people... from both bands compete on, I think it's going to be for the better. I think it's going to benefit everybody if they roll out a similar lineup for Survivor Series and Royal Rumble going forward.
Yeah,
you talked about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn last year, kind of stealing the thunder of last year's SummerSlam. And do you think it has the potential to do that this year? Just to get us off, we're not really going to go in depth about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn here, but... which show are you looking forward to the most over this weekend? We'll throw Death Before Dishonored.
Do we have to?
Oh, yeah. We'll take Death Before Dishonored immediately out of that situation.
I'm looking forward to the main event of Death Before Dishonored. And, you know, there's going to be some good matches on the actual cards. But nothing has been built as well as the main event. And, you know, taking the main event away and the show would just be essentially a glorified house show. So, yeah, taking that one out for now. NXT TakeOver, it's more of a sleeper potential as opposed to last year where it was obviously going to be sort of standout as in... comparatively to the main roster show. I'm really looking forward to Joe Nakamura, obviously. I'm looking forward to Bayley against Asuka again. And everything else on the card has the potential to be fantastic. Or good to very good, I think is a better way of putting it. But so it could do. Whereas last year I thought they would have to do really badly not to reach that level. So I don't know if I'm making much sense, but I do think that SummerSlam is more odds on to be a home run as opposed to the NXT TakeOver, which it will be very good, but I'm not convinced it's going to be as good or surpass SummerSlam this year.
No, it doesn't feel like NXT Brooklyn is coming in with the absolute stampede of momentum it did last year, where you just had two killer storylines in Bayley and Sasha Banks and Finn Balor and Kevin Owens running into that show. It felt like they had just an unstoppable amount of momentum there. I think this is based more on expected match quality between Joe and Nakamura as opposed to it being a really hot feud. I think Samoa Joe is one of the best booked people in wrestling today.
Indeed,
and his character's very hot. But this feud isn't particularly, you know, boiling as Sasha and Bayley was last year. And yeah, outside of those three title matches, it's good. It's going to be a good card, but no, this actually feels like we're on a level playing field in that SummerSlam could come out as the bigger show. We have 11 matches to talk about here, Aiden.
Yeah. In which order are we going to go? Are we going to go from the perceived less important match to the main event or the main event down?
Let's go from the bigger matches down to the bottom, because of course we don't actually know what the main event is. There's really two options. I don't think Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler is going to be the main event.
Agreed.
I think it will either be Brock or creating the new Universal Champion. So I've got it up here on Wikipedia. Let's go from what they're billing as the top match, which is Brock Lesnar taking on Randy Orton. The match 15 years in the making, despite the fact for the last 14 years and what 11 months it hasn't really been mentioned all that much, but the last month this has been 15 years in the making. Are they taking a leaf out of Jay Lethal and Jay Briscoe here?
Yeah, building up as the most anticipated rematch of all time. Yeah, you've only mentioned it for 2 weeks.
We mentioned 2 weeks ago.
But no, it's an exhibition match. You know, it's essentially the two brands colliding. I know it's very soon in the brand split, but, you know, this was actually announced, I think, before the brand split actually happened. So it's not being billed that way, but it's going to be two big powerhouses with nothing really on the line except for pride going up against each other. Obviously, the big question going into this is what's going to be happening behind the scenes in terms of, are WWE going to punish Brock Lesnar for something that he hasn't actually been found guilty of yet, which, you know, whether or not you believe that he would have taken any supplements or he failed the drug test on merit or on right. At this very moment, he's not been found guilty, so you can't really punish him for that. At the same time, do I want to see Randy Orton beat Brock Lesnar and get the rub and get the, you know, the equity that's been built up in Brock Lesnar? No. So it's a difficult one to call. Brock Lesnar, I think, will win this one. I really don't think Randy Orton, although they could run the story of, well, Randy is going to be running rampant on SmackDown and he's going to build that brand and the brand's going to be built around him. Yeah, that was exactly my next point. I don't see Randy Orton that way at all. I see him as a main event player, but not someone to build a brand around. And to be honest, if you're going to beat Brock Lesnar and take the equity and essentially take the equity of all the matches against The Undertaker and the streak, essentially, then it shouldn't be Randy Orton.
You just built that match better for me in one sentence than WWE has done.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You mentioned that this is an exhibition match. And when you said that, that immediately gives me flashbacks of Rocky IV, when it's Ivan Drago versus Apollo Creed, and it was supposed to be an exhibition. If this match is as one-sided as that, with Brock Lesnar playing Ivan Drago, I'm all about that match. I am. Or if this is a repeat of Lesnar versus Cena, I am all about that match. I have gone on record many a time of saying that Randy Orton is my least favourite wrestler of all time. So I am really? More than happy. Yes, I could write a dissertation on how much I dislike Randy Orton, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar throwing Randy Orton around like a small child, just like in the movies that Nigel McGuinness watches. Inside joke there. Go check out ROH audio this week, which you can do for 50 cent.
Yeah, become a member and listen to us on ROH to get that joke.
Look at that plugging. Yeah. I could be about that match, and I am not about an evenly booked match, which I think this will be.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anything for me. I think if they were going to punish Brock Lesnar, they would have done it properly. They would have said, right, I know they said he's not under the actual wellness policy restrictions, but had they come out and said, right, he's 30-day suspension starts now, that probably still would have given him enough time to be back for SummerSlam, I think.
Reportedly, it's actually in his contract, and I believe this is Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer who said this. In his contract, he cannot be suspended for a wellness policy violation.
Good God, they really did sign this. I'm surprised there isn't a clause in his contract to say he can just eat as many steroids as he wants.
Yeah.
If Brock Lesnar wants to ingest a horse before he comes to the ring.
You can't say that.
No, but would you be surprised at this point?
No, to be quite honest, they were that desperate to re-sign him and keep him away from UFC in the first instance.
keep him away from UFC, that went well.
Yeah, that I think they bent over backwards and it's come back to bite them in the rear, as it were.
I really wish the WWE, the biggest wrestling company in the world, wouldn't be held hostage by anybody.
No, exactly.
And that's what annoys me. But, right, we're not going to get into...
And that's where, you know, the morality part of me wants Brock Lesnar to lose. I just wish he wasn't in the ring with Randy Orton.
Exactly. I think we can't get into the politics, because then I think I would agree.
Yeah.
But to the same token, Brock Lesnar's still undefeated since beating the streak. Whoever beats Brock Lesnar next, they have to have all the faith in the world he's going to be the guy for the next 10 years. Thankfully, they decided it wasn't Roman Reigns. They saw light there, however temporarily, they seem to have seen the light there. So the next Brock Lesnar loss is one of the, if not the most important loss
Yeah.
in wrestling history, outside of the actual loss that created it.
And so, obviously he lost to Undertaker in the return match. I think, was it last SummerSlam or the SummerSlam before? But, you know, that doesn't really count because ultimately he won the feud, so.
Exactly. So there is nothing more valuable in wrestling right now than beating Brock Lesnar. They can't, in their right mind, tell me that that's Randy Orton. I know they want to try and build SmackDown, and I know they need top stars over there. But you can do that with the previous scenario. I know I said jokingly, but if Brock Lesnar absolutely destroys Randy Orton, you could then have a go at building SmackDown around venomous, angry, you know, nothing to lose heel Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
That could be an idea. I'm not into that, again, because the correct amount of Randy Orton on my TV is no percent of Randy Orton on my TV.
And it also involves another Randy Orton turn, which, yeah.
I know, but it's so passe at the moment that I don't think it matters.
No.
He will service, he can fill whatever role he needs to fill that week. And I think they're a bit light on heels on SmackDown at the moment. So Randy Orton is the kind of killer heel for Dean Ambrose. That could work. But yeah, hopefully Brock Lesnar absolutely mullers Randy Orton. That would be fantastic.
That would make your SummerSlam.
It would. Right, so that means that we're now pitching. Well, okay, the question, do you think Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton goes on last, or Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins goes on last?
For me personally, I'm not saying this is better business, but for me personally, I would much prefer Finn Balor against Seth Rollins to finish the show, only because, you're going to be definitely crowning, or essentially you're going to be crowning a new champion, and also it's a championship match, and I've always been a big proponent of you need the world, or in this case the Universal Championship, to close your show. For me, that has to be a given, but again, that's just me. Because of the politics involved in terms of, you know, SmackDown or Raw going on last, and, you know, sort of saying, well, the Universal Championship is more important than the World Championship if it goes on last, I would, just to avoid all those politics, I would just basically say Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton.
Maybe, but I think you so very rarely get to crown a brand new champion.
Yeah.
And have a brand new title that I think I would just, okay, yes, it's Raw's main eventing, but I think you have to capitalize when that train comes around. However rare it is, you have to put the new champion on top. So that leads us to the WWE Universal Championship. Quick thoughts on the name?
Is that quick enough for you?
It genuinely doesn't bother me. I think it's fine. It was a bit cheesy that they had to link it to the WWE Universe branding.
Yeah. I'm not against it, and I'm not for it. I think literally is...
I'm sure after a few months it'll roll off the tongue. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is going to be Seth Rollins taking on Finn Balor. There's two very interesting opportunities here, no matter what the outcome.
Yes.
And I think it depends on who they have more stock in. I'll make the case of Finn Balor first. First of all, what were your thoughts on the Myths of Balor segment?
The Myths of Balor segment. Was that from last Monday?
Yeah, it was, was it last Monday? No, it was the Monday before. This Monday was the debut, well, the TV debut for the Demon makeup.
Yes.
It was the week before where he was just sat on a little tomb and was telling Seth Rollins all about all these myths and legends and creatures and ghouls and stuff.
Just to clarify, because I've been moving, everything is just, every week has just been up in the air, and I can't remember the last 4 weeks in total. It's all merged into one. But yeah, I thought it was quite important, to be quite honest, because not everyone who watches Raw is going to know about the Demon. So in which case, you need to, for me, that... those segments were the introduction to what happened on Monday.
And I appreciate from that point of view.
Which will lead on to what will happen on Sunday. That's the way I looked at it.
And in fact, I think it was actually more than NXT ever did to explain the Demon part of Finn Balor.
Yeah.
I still think they missed a trick in saving that for Sunday. Maybe giving you like a smoke and mirrors glance at it, but not giving you the full Demon entrance. That would have been a cool thing to say for Sunday.
That's the thing, though, because on Monday, it did seem somewhat of a half-hearted version of the entrance. And it just, in my mind, it just made me think, well, perhaps they're just giving a little taster. And then on Sunday, people will be like, oh, that was kind of cool on Monday. You know, people who had never seen Finn Balor before as the demon. And then on Sunday, they'll just be like, whoa. That's the way that I'm looking at it.
I still think they could have done something where you got a glimpse of the demon. Like, it was just a backstage segment with Seth walking around backstage looking for the Demon King, the Demon King, the Demon King, the Demon King, the Demon King. Do you know he's called the Demon King? The Demon King, the Demon King.
Who's the Demon King?
Oh, the Finn Balor, he's the Demon King.
Oh, wow, okay. The Demon King. I've never heard that before.
The Demon King. Yeah, they could have had it where he walked into a room and the lights went off and you just see, you know, Undertaker Kane-esque, Boogeyman-esque almost. You see glimpses of him in the makeup. I think that would have been better before you see the full thing. Just to go back to the myths of Balor.
Yeah, sorry.
It was somewhat cheesy that he sat there talking about all this thing. But there was this one line that made me absolutely hell. And it was when he said, "What about the Banshees, Seth? What about the Banshees?" And I was like, I wish this entire feud was based on Seth just like Finn Balor checking that Seth Rollins knew about all of these mythical creatures. I could have watched that for a full 3-hour Raw of just Finn Balor going, "What about El Chupacabra, Seth? What about El Chupacabra?
What about the Lizard Men? The Lizard Men!
Finn, do you know about Nessie?" Let me tell you, I can't do Irish accent.
You've got into Scottish mode.
Mentioned Nessie. It happened. I turned into Billy Connolly. But yeah, just I wish it was just Finn Balor shouting random mythical beasts at Seth Rollins. That would have been the entirety of the feud, and I would have been red hot for this match. Just.
but yeah, I'm looking forward to this match. This is one of the matches that I'm looking forward to the most, because it's like, I wish in a way that Seth Rollins, well, obviously I certainly wish that Seth Rollins hadn't got injured when he did, because I still feel like he's still on making his way back at the moment. He's still not running 100%. He's about 95%, but he's still not at the level he was before he got injured. And Finn Balor obviously is in his peak at the moment, and I'm just looking forward to the match.
Did you hear about the Yeti, Seth? Let me tell you about the Yeti.
You didn't hear a word I just said, because you're too busy thinking of mythical creatures.
No, I wasn't. The Abominable Snowman, Bigfoot. No. I agree. Seth, you know what? He's actually impressed me in every match I've seen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I still think 95% Seth is better than pretty much anybody else on the roster right now.
Completely agree.
And that's what's making me think this is a very difficult decision, because there is a good reason for going for either of these men. I think they see a lot of stock in Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is the complete package. He can have the best matches. He has a great look. He's handsome as anything. And he can cut a promo. I think Finn has got better in that last respect, because he is just as good as Seth across the board and all of those things, except for his promo ability. I think he's got better.
Mm-hmm.
And I have liked these, other than shouting random mythical creatures at Seth Rollins, I have enjoyed his last few weeks at promos. They have got markedly better in NXT, as was the hope. That was the only thing he needed to work on in NXT. But I still think that he's not as good as Seth Rollins as a complete package. So do they want the kind of the accolade of being the first ever Universal Champion to go to someone they know works, someone they know they can put a lot of faith in? Or do they want to make Finn Balor in one night and give him the accolade of being the hot new guy and the first ever WWE Universal Champion? That's my conundrum at the moment, and I can't quite square it at the second.
The werewolf, Seth. The werewolves. sorry, can't resist that. Right, okay, look at this. Right, first of all, right, let me ask you a question. With Seth Rollins, do you think that he's being utilized correctly at the moment, in terms of, do you feel like I do that it's a bit of a rehash of before he got injured?
A little bit. They missed a tricky not turning babyface, but if they knew this was coming, then maybe. But this is the thing. Maybe he's been misused. Maybe it's been a bit of a rehash, but he's still very good at what he does.
Oh, no, certainly. But answer me this. If they built up the demon as, you know, essentially an Undertaker-style character, essentially this mythical creature that you just can't beat. If he comes out in his debut match as a demon and he loses, doesn't that take the whole mystique away? It doesn't matter how he loses. If he loses, it takes it away. So for me, for that reason alone, I can only go with Finn Balor.
And that makes a lot of sense. It's hard to dispute that. But, and this is another key issue in my thinking here, SummerSlam has traditionally been WrestleMania for heels. This True. Is where they go big on the heels winning to kind of set them up for the rest of the year, with WrestleMania being, you know, the furthest big four show away. This is where you want to at least start to put your pieces in order if you're going to have a big heel title run so they can be thwarted at WrestleMania. This could be revisited at WrestleMania, by all means.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This could be, if Seth wins here, through whatever means Seth wins here, then you could come back to this at WrestleMania. I do agree that it might dampen the impact of the demon character, but again, I just can't get away from the fact that they will have more faith in Seth and they will want to give him that title because he's younger than Finn Balor as well. So they're going to have, if they both have equally long careers, they're going to get more mileage out of Seth Rollins.
See, ideally, in my head, when all this was going down, I booked it in my head that Seth Rollins would win, beat Finn Balor just as Finn Balor. And then you put Finn Balor in chase mode to the point where he eventually turned into the demon. And that's when he'd beat Seth. And to me, that's more logical instead of rushing into what they've done. But again, I can't see past the fact that you would seriously damage the demon on his debut in front of the for the people who've seen NXT, it wouldn't, not that much. It would perhaps put a dent. But for the people who have no idea what's going on and all they see is this essentially white Irish guy dressing up in demon paint, they're not going to take it seriously. They're not going to be as invested as they should be in the demon character. And for me, the only logical sense is for Finn to win.
But what if Jamaican Carnage is just stage one of the demon? And then he comes out like, have you heard of Cthulhu, Seth? What about Cthulhu? I'm Cthulhu now. Look at me. I really can't do an Irish accent, can I?
No, that's more Finn McBalor.
I know.
That's cool.
I should try and channel Brad Pitt in Snatch, but I can't maintain it. So we're going to move on. I will, for the record, this is a cheeky punt. I'm going to put my money on Seth Rollins.
Okay.
By hook or by crook, I don't think it goes down clean. I think Seth comes out of this with the Universal title. I hope I'm wrong to a little extent. I like both of these people, so I actually have no real problem with either of them. But yeah. I think... And sorry, what was your official prediction?
My official prediction is Finn Balor. Okay.
So, very much the third kind of main event, and very much the bronze medal here, is Dean Ambrose taking on Dolph Ziggler for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Oh, wait, it's not the World Heavyweight Championship anymore. It's just the WWE World Championship.
Yeah.
They've tried. I must admit, I haven't kept up with SmackDown as much as I probably should. I've seen, I think I've only missed 1 week. But they've made a concerted effort to make this a personal feud for one, which I didn't think they would do. And to actually give Dolph Ziggler some actual character for once that's different from I show off and I win, no big deal.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I know there was a sort of an outcry when Dolph Ziggler became number one contender because everyone's thinking, well, he's not really at that level. But at the same time, who else did they really have to go with? You know, as I wrote in my blog last week, you know, essentially you had Baron Corbin, who's not ready for that position yet. Apollo Crews, who essentially would be the same story they were telling on Raw with Finn Balor, so that's not the right time to do it. Bray Wyatt against Dean Ambrose, no. So, for me, Dolph Ziggler was the obvious choice. Now, obviously, he's a damaged character. You know, over the years, he's been damaged to the point where people have just started to lose interest in him, and I understand that. But they have made an effort. I do believe he should have turned heel. I think this is the perfect opportunity for him to basically go, instead of talking about the backstage politics and the insider terms like the glass ceiling and things like that, if he had turned around and said, I've been working my butt off, I've been putting on fantastic matches for you, but because I've been pandering to you people, I've lost the matches. It would have explained so much away. It would have turned the crowd against him, and I think that would have been a better character. So I give WWE props for giving him a shot, for trying to give him more of a character. I just give him a bit of a fail for not turning heel. So, yeah.
I think this match very much serves the purpose of we need to give Dean a win at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And it's somewhat big. It doesn't have to be massive, because obviously beating Dolph Ziggler isn't what it used to be.
No.
But I see it that way. I think, I know you said no to this prospect, but I think your money match on SmackDown for a big show, possibly for Survivor Series, is going to be Dean Ambrose versus Bray Wyatt with Bray winning the title. So I think you need to give Dean a few wins in between there against you know, lesser lights, such as Dolph Ziggler and the like, to get him to that point. And I don't think, with the option being between him and Dolph Ziggler for this match, I wouldn't want to spunk Wyatt versus Ambrose on SummerSlam if Ambrose is going to retain. So it makes sense there. They could turn Dolph, Dolph could lose and then turn heel at the end of the match. That gets us through Backlash with the rematch happening on that card, which is coming up pretty sharply after SummerSlam anyway. So,
And don't get me wrong, I do completely agree with you. The money match that they're building towards, and they're building well, in all fairness, on SmackDown, is Bray Wyatt against Dean Ambrose. I've still got the hologram finish stuck in my head.
Forgot about the hologram.
Yeah, that's why I said no so vehemently. But at the same time, they have started to turn that away from my head, the way that they've been building the sort of feud to the side of this particular match feud.
Okay, I have faith in them. I think they'll be able to turn it around. So just to put the money down, I think Dean Ambrose retains.
I don't think there's any doubt Dean Ambrose retains.
They could go for the shock and have Dolph turn in the match and win the title that way, and then you get to the rematch at Backlash that way. But no, I think they know that Dean Ambrose, because John Cena's on SmackDown and Randy Orton are on SmackDown, but they know the money at the moment, the big draw will be Dean on the house shows as champion. So, yeah, I think Dean retains it. Right, let's step it up a slight gear now. We're getting into the bit of the mid-card shuffle here. Speaking of the face that runs a place, John Cena will be taking on AJ Styles in a singles match. This is essentially a rubber match in this kind of weird series, in that we had a screwy finish for part one, a tag team win where John Cena pinned AJ at the last pay-per-view as round two, and now we get into the rubber match. An interesting way to get there, but I'm still excited for this match if it's going to be a straightforward, no clunky finish deal this time around.
Yeah, and I completely agree, because they do work well together. Obviously, AJ Styles is, and no pun intended, phenomenal. He really is. And John Cena doesn't get the credit that he deserves for when he turns it up and the matches he has on those occasions. I'm going to go out on a limb and basically say that I honestly think that this might be the occasion when John Cena loses the feud to a heel. And I think that this will be the platform for AJ Styles to have a good run on the SmackDown brand as either number one or number two heel. Only because if anybody is going to slay the Superman, as it were, I've seen a lot of signs that they've got a lot of faith in AJ Styles. I'm probably being a bit too generous, and I'm probably going to be wrong, but I've just got this feeling.
You've got a feeling?
I've got a feeling.
No. See, I'm kind of with you. They do feel like they have a lot of faith in AJ Styles. He's getting on. He is an old gentleman, but so is John Cena at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think, if John's working the limited schedule and he's not going to be there as much, it's going to benefit AJ Styles to win this feud clean. I think there's a lot you can do on SmackDown with a hot AJ Styles with that brag under his belt. In fact, if they're not building towards Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose, then they could easily build towards AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose as the alternate choice there, if they want to say Bray Wyatt's win for further down the road, maybe. I'd like to think it's going to happen, but never bet against John Cena.
No, that's the thing. That's why my feeling might be wrong. You know, just to the point about AJ Styles getting on, in which case that sort of leads more weight towards, that argument, because they obviously have got a lot of faith in him. You know, they've done more with him than I thought that they would do. And at this stage now is the time to strike, when he's still having good matches and he's still got the cred with the crowd. I think this. I honestly think that this might be the time. Obviously, John Cena can come back in 6 months' time, and take on AJ Styles again and get everything his heat back. But I just think that this is the time for AJ Styles.
I hear you. I like the logic. I feel like they could do more with AJ Styles winning this match. I want AJ Styles to be a big face on SmackDown. I want him to win the WWE Championship. But John Cena wins because John Cena wins because John Cena wins.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that's the factor of the matter. Right, so let's get into our mid-card championship matches. We'll start with Rusev taking on Roman Reigns for the WWE United States. I know. God, do I want Rusev to do something of substance, and then out came Roman Reigns. Like, well, we can give this month a miss.
Yeah, I just.
I think the unfortunate thing is, it feels like, to me at least, this is a foregone conclusion. Roman's going to win the US title. And I think that's a benefit to the show, because I think it then just gives Roman Reigns an excuse to not be in the WWE Universal title match.
To a point, I'm going by booking 101 here, because Reigns won on Monday, so the Monday before the pay-per-view, so booking 101 dictates that the other person wins. I don't necessarily see Rusev winning clean here. I don't know what you do with Rusev if he does lose to Roman Reigns. I'm personally thinking this might continue for another month, unfortunately. I can basically see Rusev retaining, but Roman Reigns winning the match by DQ or count out or anything like that. I don't see a clean finish in this one.
So you feel that they could extend this to the next show, which will be after Backlash, so it'll be a month or two away now.
I don't feel that they should, but I feel that they could.
It just feels like it's actually a smart piece of booking. If they're accepting that the Roman Reigns experiment hasn't worked for now, no doubt they will go back to that business. They give him that US title, that gets him out the mix, that gets him some new matchups actually that could actually help him. He's not just facing Seth or Dean or Rusev all the time. It gives him some fresher matchups, I think, on the mid card, and allows him to actually build Finn Balor in his stead for a potential match down the road there. I would love Rusev to beat Roman Reigns clean, but no, that's not going to happen. Because they could do a lot with Rusev. I really feel he's got a great mix of he can be goofy and he can be funny, but when he needs to, he can still turn it on and be mean. They would only need to give him two back-to-back matches of him being mean, and you believe him as a killer heel. There's a lot they can do with Rusev. I'm annoyed he's actually on Raw. I would prefer him on SmackDown, but there we go.
Yeah, I don't see this being a clean finish, and in which case, obviously Rusev is gonna win. Gonna retain his championship either way. I'm doubting my opinion that they might drag it on, but I don't know. I just don't see Roman Reigns as the US champion. I don't see what you do with him moving forward from there, because I don't want to say no one, but people are still not buying him, and I don't see what the US championship would do to boost that up.
I feel like it's something they can do to get him away. Then he has an actual concrete reason for not being in the title picture. Yeah. And I think that's what they need, because then they'd have to then find a way of explaining that away. And it's harder to do when he hasn't got a title. You think the way they push Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns' character would dictate that he would always be going and gunning for the top belt. I just think it's a nice way of getting him out of that picture. And again, he does have some people that he hasn't faced, because he's pretty much always been at the top of the card, that he could face in the mid card. And just in the same way that the US title helped John Cena with the exact same problem last year, it could help Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is not on John Cena's level when it comes to that. I don't actually think it will have the same effect, but I can see their logic of doing it.
You do have to give Roman Reigns props, because it takes a lot of talent to be an American taking on a foreign menace for the US championship and still not get over.
I know. Wow, how badly that's fun. So just to clarify, you're going with Rusev to retain by some means.
Yeah, by hook or by crook.
Okay, I'm going to put my money on Roman here. Right, moving on, we have Sasha Banks taking on Charlotte for the WWE Women's Championship, and Dana Brooke is banned from ringside. This just feels like a rematch, like they have to do this. It doesn't particularly feel hot to me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's had the build that it should have. It feels to me that it's more about the Charlotte-Dana Brooke sort of mini drama going on than it has been about her facing Sasha Banks. I know they had that angle at the end of Raw. Well, not the end of Raw, but at the end of their segment on Raw where Charlotte injured Sasha Banks. But it seems to have lost a bit of steam, obviously when Sasha Banks gets out there, she's going to get a monster pop, and I think that will carry both women to a fantastic match. But it's not what it should have been, and that's slightly disappointing.
It feels like the Dean Ambrose match. It feels like this is just a match set up to give Sasha Banks, you know, a chance to have a big win, slay the demon. So not that demon. did I tell you about the basilisk? The basilisk, Sasha. Yes, Finn, you told me about the basilisk. It feels like they can just get the specter of Charlotte out of the way. Sasha wins, and then she's established as she's a strong champion. She's beat the former champion twice now. Who do we move on to next? That's a big question in and of itself. Paige has just been suspended. So Paige isn't what's next for Sasha Banks. Dana Brooke, potentially, but that's not going to be a great feud or match. It can be a fine one on the microphone, because Dana Brooke is actually quite good on the microphone, but she's still lacking in the ring. If they bring Bayley up, maybe, but that feels too soon.
Yeah.
There's some question marks after this match, but there's none for me in terms of the result here. I think Sasha goes over pretty conclusively.
Definitely. And just as a quick question, do you think Bayley gets involved in any way?
No, that doesn't feel like the way to do it with Bayley. Because you'd like to think they're going to sell her loss to Asuka quite hard. Maybe she turns up on Raw. That's certainly a thing to kind of kick off. Yes, we've got 2 months for our next pay-per-view. The next pay-per-view is SmackDown-based, but here's Bayley.
Yeah.
Potentially, here's Joe as well. Actually, no, Joe should be on SmackDown.
SmackDown, yeah, without a doubt.
Okay, well, that was pretty quick. Let's go with the tag title match next. This is the New Day taking on Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson for the WWE Tag Team titles, and this, for the honor of Big E's nuts.
This feud has been nuts. There's a lot of balls up in the air for this one. I've got 1,000 of these. We can do these all night.
And you didn't balls it up.
Hey!
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is a match literally built around testicles. Fantastic. Yeah, this is... It's interesting. They've purposefully taken Big E out of the picture. They could have taken Xavier Woods out of the picture, who's usually the kind of sacrificial lamb for the New Day.
Yeah.
They could have taken him out and had Kofi Kingston and Big E defend it. I think it's interesting they're finally giving Xavier Woods a chance to defend the titles that he's held for a year.
I don't know the answer to this question, but has he actually been, apart from any 3-on-2 or possibly 3-on-3 matches, has he actually been involved in just a straight-up tag team sort of championship defending?
Well, it was on the line in the Elimination Chamber, in which all three members were in the thing. But I can't actually recollect he's ever actually been one of the people on the defending side. It's almost always Big E and Kofi. So that could be a way of, right, you've had this glorious year of the New Day, but if they're feeling like, right, we need some more single stars, we might need to break up the New Day, this is the way to do it. I actually think Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson are going to win here, to kind of give them a bit of oomph that they've been lacking. And in the process, they beat Xavier Woods, and that's what causes the rift, is that Big E comes back, singles at Xavier for losing his title that he's defended for a year, and they send Big E off on his own.
So basically, Xavier Woods balls it up.
Yes, Hayden. Yes. Well done. Very brave.
Thank you. I could be a Raw writer. But yeah, it's... I like your scenario, and I've also got this thing in the back of my head, and we didn't talk about this, that Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson could align with Seth Rollins in the sort of end of the show, and you could end up with Seth Rollins, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson holding gold.
Seth as opposed to Finn?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying it was a scenario that we didn't talk about.
That's gonna be interesting. So they kind of reject Finn and say, you used to be in charge, but now this guy.
Yeah.
That could be a good idea. That's a way of getting Seth the championship.
Because I know I wasn't gonna, I said we were going to talk about it, but might as well now. But yes, if you think about it, Seth works well when he's got a couple of lackeys. And I think that might be what is missing from his act at the moment. And having Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, who work the best as lackeys to a leader, I think that's a nice fit. I haven't seen any hints that that's going that way, which is why I didn't bring it up earlier. But it's just a scenario to look out for, I think.
I think this then brings me back to one of your previous negatives about Seth, and that it all feels like a rehash. Does not then giving him two lackeys also feel like a rehash?
But it's more of a threat, sort of lackeys, as opposed to J&J security.
Okay, that's a fair point. Well, just to revert back to this match, yeah, I'm going to go against the grain. I think Gallows and Anderson win here, and this might be the beginning of the end of the New Day. I don't know if I'm okay with that, because I do enjoy the New Day act.
I've appreciated them more the last couple of months.
Good lad. I knew you'd come round eventually. But then the question becomes, who do they face for those titles? You know what I mean? They put American Alpha over on SmackDown out of the way. That kind of negates that potential big match. So it feels like they could do... They've had a year. They've had a glorious run. Let's now give someone else a turn and get the New Day in chase mode as opposed to as champion.
And I think it would be an entertaining storyline with Kofi, Xavier and Big E sort of imploding. I think I like that idea, actually. And Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson haven't set the world on fire since they debuted. And nearly exactly like you said, they need that little bit of oomph to get them back up the level that they deserve to be at.
Mm-hmm. And then they can, of course, build to the very obvious match of Gallows and Anderson taking on Enzo and Big Cass down the road.
Yes.
That feels to me like they were never going to have Amore and Cass beat fan favourites New Day, because that's just messy.
Yeah.
Put it on a heel team. I don't think Gallows and Anderson will have a lengthy title run. I think they would be make weights between, you know, getting the New Day to where they need to be for the breakup and then moving it on to the red hot Enzo and Cass.
Yeah,
that seems like the most logical path here.
No arguments from me.
Okay, well, we'll book from tradition for a split second then, just to talk about Enzo and Cass whilst we're bringing him up. They are taking on Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens in a straightforward tag team match. Enzo and Cass?
Yeah, has to be. I don't know how I feel about Kevin Owens losing two pay-per-views in a row.
Jericho can take the loss.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. You know, Enzo and Cass are incredibly entertaining. They're not exactly the most polished in the ring, but at the same time, it doesn't really matter with their act. Very similar to New Day in a way. You know, New Day, although New Day have got the in-ring ability, most of their act is about the entertainment factor, and I feel the same way about Enzo and Cass. Jericho and Owens have actually surprised me, because I used to be a massive Chris Jericho fan back in the early 2000s. I was a massive, massive fan. Over the years, he just started to grate on me and grate on me, and just little things that he's done has really irritated me. But over the last couple of months, I've seen more of the Jericho I used to like, and toning back the comedy a little bit and having a nice balance. And I've thoroughly enjoyed any segment that's involved Jericho and Owens, but at the moment they are building up Enzo and Cass as the next big thing on Raw. So if they took the loss here, I'd be very surprised.
This is again a slight tangent. I genuinely think Chris Jericho's lost his touch.
Really?
Like, he has lost his ability to know. It's kind of working. I know people are into it, but I couldn't be less into Chris Jericho right now. And I, too, was a massive Chris Jericho fan. But everything he seems to pick up as, like, his new thing annoys me more. Like, the whole quiet, which he thinks is heat, and it's really not. It's just so irritating. Not, like, good irritating. It's just, like, shut up. I'm fast-forwarding now. I fast-forward through all Chris Jericho promos at the second, because they're just that grating to me. The quiet thing, the whole scarf deal, the stupid idiot line, everything he's doing is annoying me at the moment.
I guess it's like me when I listen to his podcast, because I do like him as an interviewer, I think he gets against really good stuff out of his people that he's interviewing. But then he starts doing things like banging stuff against buckets and things like that, which is not entertaining at all. So yeah, I can definitely see what you mean.
I know I have an ear for this because I did do a media degree, but he has the worst cutaways in history.
Yeah.
Like when he's like, oh, okay, Shinsuke, haha, great joke. I'm going to ask you about this, but first, oh, wait, I need to plug this. Oh, we're going to have to get off this tangent because I'm going to media, man. Yeah, Endzone cast, go over in New York. I still don't think Enzo's actually smashed it out the park with a promo yet. I'm still waiting for him to have the golden promo. He's done fine, but I still don't think he's really nailed one for me. There's still a few good jokes in all of them, but we're getting there.
And also, do you think Enzo and Cass have any potential to lose in Brooklyn?
Well, they could, because again, it's WrestleMania for the heels. So they could do. They really want to go big with Jericho and Owens, but I think this is a temporary thing, and yeah, I do think...
That would kill the show, though. It would kill the show. It wouldn't be heat. It would just kill the show.
You might be right there. Right, let's move this into absolute top gear for three matches that could make up the pre-show. I think at least two of these will do. We have the, again, because I haven't been watching SmackDown all that closely, the completely out of the blue Miz versus Apollo Crews match. Where did that come from?
There was a number one contenders match a couple of weeks ago for Apollo Crews. And he won it.
Ah, well, okay, that explains that. Miz taking on Apollo Crews. I think Miz retains. I feel like that they've got some stock in Miz as the kind of as the mid-card placeholder heel. So I like him. I don't think Apollo Crews got any amount of momentum at the moment to be taking that title.
No, and they could have told the story about Apollo Crews sort of 1 year after TakeOver Brooklyn, coming in after beating Ty Dillinger last year, having 12 months of moving up to the main roster and working his way up and winning the Intercontinental Championship. But they haven't told that story, and it's not been particularly effective, this build. So just for that sake, I would say The Miz.
Yep, I agree. We have the first in the Best of 7 series, which is actually a Best of 9 series because they've already wrestled 2 weeks in a freaking row. But yeah, we've got another 7 to look forward to of Cesaro taking on Sheamus. I say that flippantly. I have enjoyed the last two matches more than I've enjoyed Sheamus matches for a while. Yeah. But yes, yeah, Cesaro versus Sheamus, first match of a Best of 7 series. How are they going to... It's always a challenge to come up with 7 different matches, because I always prefer a series of 5, because I just think there is easily 5 different matches you can get out of a person. 7 is gratuitous.
Yeah, that's going to be the difficult thing is having 7, well, let's say 4, potentially 7, sort of different kind of matches that are not going to get repetitive and have the crowd turn on you.
And it's really hard to get excited about match number 1.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably going to be the heel that's going to win the first one.
Yep.
So in that instance, it's going to be Sheamus.
I agree. And finally, we have a 6-woman tag match.
Yeah.
This is Carmella, Becky Lynch and Naomi, who's apparently now a babyface, taking on Natalya, Eva Marie and Alexa Bliss. Oh, wow. Becky Lynch must be so overjoyed that she got drafted to SmackDown.
I don't know what to say about this. Let's look here. There's 2 women in this who I think are incredibly good wrestlers. There's 2 in here who I think have got really good potential. And there's 2 in here who in the ring, no, don't do it for me at all.
I'm going to guess that Becky Lynch and Natalya are obviously the good people.
Yeah.
Naomi and Alexa Bliss have potential.
Carmella.
Way word. Yeah.
You
are picking Carmella for potential over Alexa Bliss.
No, Carmella and Alexa.
Oh, it's Naomi you're down on.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I actually think Carmella's still got a very... She's done better. She's getting her spots better, but the kind of transitions between those aren't great. Oh, yeah. Admittedly, I haven't seen a Naomi match in a very, very long, long time.
Carmella, it feels to me, was called up way too soon. I think the split with her and Enzo and Cass was at the right time in terms of them going to the main roster and her staying in developmental, because it meant that she was on her own to develop her character and develop her skills. And it just feels like they called her up too soon. But I do see I do see a lot of potential there.
I don't know about Carmella. It felt like her and Alexa Bliss Maybe they did need more time, Carmella especially more than Bliss did. But I think they've done so much already in that women's division that it felt like they were the bridesmaids that needed to be moved on. Maybe they weren't ready, but as is the problem with NXT, which is kind of ironic, that they can't keep people down there for years and years and years and years at this point, other than Bayley, obviously. It did kind of feel like the right time to move them up from an exposure point of view. But yeah, you're probably right about Carmella. But having said that, she's now going to be wrestling far more frequently.
Yeah.
That's only going to help her more to get up to speed with things.
And again, she's going to get a good reaction in Brooklyn.
Oh, hell yeah. She's going to be loved. I feel like Eva Marie's going to win the match.
I don't know. They've played this whole angle on SmackDown where she's scheduled to wrestle and she doesn't turn up for any reason. I can see logically that Eva Marie comes to the ring but can't actually get on the apron, and then she sneaks in and gets the victory over Becky Lynch. That wouldn't surprise me.
That's what I'm envisioning too. So yeah, I'll put my money on the heels, but I wouldn't be over surprised if the last thing we see is Becky Lynch tapping somebody out to the Disarmer.
Yeah, no, agree.
Okay, well that's going to do us for the overall card. What are you feeling? How are you simmering at the moment in terms of your excitement level for SummerSlam?
On a scale to 1 to 10?
I don't like 1 to 10 scales. Let's go 1 to 5.
1 to 5. A 4. Because I really love SummerSlam. It's because it's always been around my birthday, which you haven't wished me happy birthday in 2 podcasts so far, Darren.
When is your birthday?
2 weeks ago, but that's beside the point.
I did wish you happy birthday.
You did, in all fairness.
Ooh, Hayden. Trying to make me look like PR.
But no, SummerSlam has always been a bit special for me because it is always around my birthday, and it's to me, I've always enjoyed SummerSlam more than Survivor Series and the other events as well, apart from WrestleMania, obviously. So there's always that little special buzz with me around SummerSlam time. This one, I think there's a lot of potential to go wrong if they don't book it the right way. But at the same time, I don't think they will, and I do think that it's going to be a good card on paper, and I think it's going to be a good card in reality.
Okay, I'm sitting at about a 3.
Okay,
I think it has potential. There's a lot of I'm really interested to see Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins.
Yes,
that's going to kick a lot of ass. I think John Cena versus AJ Styles is probably my second most anticipated match on this card. Really looking forward to that as well. There's a lot. I'm looking forward to seeing New York react to Enzo and Cass. I'm looking forward to what they could be doing potentially with the New Day, what they could potentially be doing with Dean. I'm looking forward to Brock Lesnar flattening a snake. That should be quite fun.
Brooklyn's reaction to Roman Reigns.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. That's going to be joyous. I'm excited for my weekend of wrestling. Let's put it that way. There's potential for great matches both on Saturday night at TakeOver Brooklyn and on the SummerSlam card itself.
And if people want to actually hear audio reviews and all that and that sort of thing, where can they go?
They can go to prowrestling.net. And of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you want to listen to audio reviews of Death Before Dishonor, TakeOver Brooklyn 2, SummerSlam, Raw, SmackDown, ROH, NXT, TNA, The Works, all you have to do, go over to the sign-up page on prowrestling.net, type in the code SLAM7, 7 is a number, and it's all one word, and you can get all of that, plus much more, for just 50 cents for 1 month. For 37p, I think I said.
38.
My apologies. But yeah, for a low, 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 low price, you're going to get covered for this awesome weekend of wrestling and beyond. Well worth your time. I hope you enjoy, Hayden, your SummerSlam, as it means so much more to you than it seemingly does to me. Well, go on then, Hayden. Favourite SummerSlam?
Without a doubt, 1991.
Ooh, what happened in 91? Best one memory. Was that the one in the UK?
No, it wasn't. That was 1992.
I knew that was 92.
The reason for it was, as you know, Darren, the first pay-per-view I ever watched was the one that was broadcast on the day you were born,
which indeed was, it was
Royal Rumble 1991. But the one that I remember the most is SummerSlam 1991 because of Bret Hart against Mr. Perfect, which was the first time I stopped looking at wrestling not necessarily stop looking, but I saw wrestling not just as in-your-face superheroes, larger-than-life. I understood stories and the emotions that can come from a well-wrestled match. Bret Hart against Mr. Perfect is probably the reason I'm here now talking to you. And, okay, the rest of the card wasn't great, but that match means a lot to me. So for that reason alone, it's SummerSlam 1991.
I was probably trying to eat a rattle whilst you were watching that.
Probably.
That's what I was up to during SummerSlam 1991. Well, SummerSlam holds a slightly significant place for me as well, because SummerSlam is how I track how long I've been watching wrestling for.
Okay.
As I watched one of the Raws building up to SummerSlam 2000, which was headlined by The Rock, Kurt Angle, and I believe Triple H.
Yeah.
There we go. I started watching it a few weeks prior to that one in the build-up, and I can remember verbatim the first segment I ever saw. I've probably told you this before. It was Stevie Richards stealing one of the tables of the Dudley Boys, and apparently Stevie Richards stealing some furniture was enough to make me a wrestling fan now for 16 years. But there we go.
That explains a lot.
Yes, it does. So, yeah, SummerSlam is how I kind of chart how long I've been watching wrestling for. I did really get excited for my first ever wrestling pay-per-view. And whilst it's waned and SummerSlam and even Survivor Series has kind of taken its place, SummerSlam is very much my least favourite of the big four pay-per-views. It still holds that significance. And hopefully this year, Books Trend, we have a really, really strong show. I hope that SummerSlam's better than NXT. I hope they're both fantastic and they both drag up the standards of each other. I'm excited to see where we go after this SummerSlam, heading into the first of the branded pay-per-views. But yeah, plug away, Hayden.
As always, you can find me on Twitter at Hayden Gleet. Now that I'm starting to settle down after my big move, I will be starting to write blogs every week, so keep an eye out for them. If you take up the offer of the $0.50 offer from ProWrestling.net, which you can find on the main pages of ProWrestling.net, then you will be able to hear me and Darren do the ROH audio this week, recapping the television show. And then next week, or possibly the week after, there will be a review of Progress Wrestling coming from the UK. So if you pay 50 cents, you'll get it for the full month, and you'll also get that audio in a couple of weeks' time.
You lucky, lucky people. You can follow me on Twitter at The Gutchard. You can go to my other website, FoulEntertainment.com. That's Foul, spelled F-O-U-L, entertainment.com. We have several podcasts up at the moment. We have our Pokemon Go podcast, Gotta Cast Them All. We have reviews for Star Trek Beyond. And hopefully by the time this podcast goes up, our Suicide Squad review will also be up as well. And yeah, you can keep across all the things I'm doing at The Guttridge on Twitter. What he's going to do is... Oh, go on. Sorry.
I was going to say one word about Suicide Squad. Thoughts?
Go on. Good. I liked it. I seem to like it more than most people did.
Yeah, decent. That's the way I put it.
Better than Batman vs. Superman.
Oh, hell yeah.
But having said that, I'd rather watch 10 Randy Orton matches back-to-back, and they're all Iron Man matches, before I'd watch Batman vs. Superman again.
And that is some seriously serious...
I have thrown a lot of shade at Batman vs. Superman in the sentence. Anyway, that's going to do us for the British Invasion podcast. We hope you enjoy your wrestling weekend, and we will be back with ROH audio and Progress Wrestling audio next week.
Bye.